The Netflix series Sweet Tooth is a strange mix. It's a dystopian tale of societal collapse in the wake of a deadly virus and the rise of human-animal hybrids, but it's also a warm, humane, lushly shot fable of hope and humanity, which is to say it is itself a kind of strange hybrid. Think The Road meets Paddington 2, The Walking Dead meets Pushing Daisies. I'm Glenn Weldon, and today we're talking about Sweet Tooth on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR, so don't go away.
Marine biologist Mara Hart studies the love lives of lobsters, which includes a lot of foreplay.
He'll sort of stroke her with his antenna and his walking legs.
Love stories from the ocean. That's on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Welcome back. Joining me today from her home studio is Audie Cornish. She's the host of All Things Considered, Heard of It, and NPR's daily afternoon news podcast, Consider This. Hey, Audie, welcome back.
Hey, how are you? So glad to be here.
I'm wellish, you know, considering.
Exactly. All things considered.
We
did it. We got it in there.
Now, Sweet Tooth is the story of Gus, a 10-year-old boy who's part human, part deer. He's one of a wave of animal-human hybrids that began to appear just as a deadly virus wiped out much of humanity. He's been living in the forest under the protection of his father, played by Will Forte. But as no one is certain how the hybrids and the virus are connected, did they cause it or are they the result of it, some of the remaining humans seek to shelter the hybrids and some seek to hunt them down. Gus befriends the gruff loner Jeopard, played by Nonzo Anozie, and they set out across America to find answers about their respective pasts. Meanwhile, one doctor, played by Adil Akhtar, is on a desperate search for a cure to the virus, though he may have to compromise his soul to do so. It's based on a comic series by Jeff Lemire, though it is markedly different in tone, as we'll discuss later. 8 episodes dropped on Netflix a few weeks ago. Audie, what are you thinking of Sweet Tooth?
I was listening to all of your descriptions, and I think I really liked the lushly shot fable line that you used. And then I had Walking Dead / Care Bears.
Okay.
But I'll say that it is actually quite difficult. It was difficult for me to watch a dystopia or an apocalyptic fantasy in which there is a runaway viral strain and there are children in danger. It actually felt oddly too close to home, even though I know all the source material predated our current pandemic. But it is still jarring to see mask wearing, to see people panicking, to see basically the fact that most creators seem to think that if we run into a situation like this, society will completely collapse within 3 to 4 days. Like, there's really very little faith in how we can hold on to these things. I'd love to hear more from you, Glenn, about the basic plot and structure, but my initial sense of it was like, this is actually kind of dark, despite all that they're doing to make it whimsical and light and kind of Bambi-ish and sort of family-friendly.
Absolutely. I mean, that is an excellent point because this show is so different from the book. It's much lighter in tone than the book that, and I love the book, but I like this more exactly because it is making that switch. I reviewed a show recently called Utopia, which was all about, you know, a virus and a vaccine. It was made before COVID. It was actually based on a British series. It was made years back. But man, that hit me at the height of the pandemic, and I was not ready for it because it was also, you know, masks and frontline workers and hazmat suits and, you know, conspiracy theories. And that show seemed to delight in its violence. It would physically mutilate its characters for kicks. This is a much softer show, though. And so for me, coming from the books, I was surprised how different it is. Because again, the books are pretty bleak. They're more violent. There's a lot more human trafficking in the books. It's a much more cruel world. And, you know, Jeff Lemire, as an artist and as a writer, is a stylish. So his dystopia is blasted and shattered. It's all browns and grays and blacks. The first thing that hits you is how different this show looks. It is lush and green and vibrant.
And we should say that we're not just flinging around that word like a critic's word. Like, it starts in the woods.
Yes,
absolutely. A la sort of Hannah, if anyone remembers that.
Sure.
Sort of assassin show where you have a parent who's bringing their child to be raised away from society and teaching them sort of survival skills.
Yep.
Of course, right away you notice that this child has antlers.
Mm-hmm.
Something is going to be a little different. And it cuts back to society falling apart, where there's the emergence of both this virus and the emergence of children who are hybrid animals. And it's worth noting here, they use puppeteering technology rather than CGI to lean into the animal part of it. I found that extremely compelling, tactile, and rich looking, you know what I mean, to grab onto, compared to maybe His Dark Materials, which is like very CGI's. That's the HBO show adaptation. And there, those children and their animals, it just, there's a little bit of like that screensaver quality
that I feel like
I'm watching when I watch CGI.
But this show, I think, really takes advantage of its New Zealand shooting locations. But I think the visuals are goosed a little bit by CGI because this show looks so crisp.
Yeah, the color is insane.
Yes, super saturated. It gives your TV a workout. And sometimes it seems a little bit too crisp, too real. And I'm going to push back on the practical effects. I love that they use practical effects for when we see, like, for example, some of the other hybrids. But those kids look like they escaped from a children's theater production of Cats. It looks really bad.
Okay. No. Let's demarcate, okay? I think I am specifically talking about, first of all, the main actor, Christian Convery, who plays Sweet Tooth, has a little set of ears that I learned are remote control. Mm-hmm. So he's not controlling them, which means they literally have a mind of their own. Someone else is doing it. And in the early part, the nursery and the babies, when they first show these hybrid creatures, like a hybrid newborn bird, a hybrid newborn goat, someone paid attention to what newborns look like, because newborns are otherworldly creatures that don't really know what to do with their limbs, and their eyes are closed, and they do look alien-like.
Right.
And that really worked for me. Now, yes, okay, later when the kids are like 12 and there's just a set of ears and a tail on them, it does feel a little bit like Halloween costume-ish. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I don't know, Glenn. I feel like you're setting a very high bar for... Would you rather they were CGI? Would you rather it was sort of a Guardians of the Galaxy type thing?
No. But I mean, I, you know, again, in concept, I love practical effects and execution. I just thought here was a little bit lacking. But I will say that I love the inclusion of those other hybrids. This show, at just about every turn, when it has, there's a fork in the road, it could make the choice that the book makes or make a gentler, more humane choice. It always goes to the more hopeful choice. And recently, we've been getting a lot of TV adaptations of comics that were made in the aughts and the teens when cynical and nihilistic and violent was kind of the prevailing ethos. And because this book came from that time, that's what I was expecting. Again, it is more gentle. Now, sometimes, as you mentioned, it does overcorrect. This is the Care Bears thing I think you were saying before. When you've got a kid main character, particularly one who's portrayed as innocent, even though Christian Convery is great as Gus, there's always the risk of veering off into twee, you know. So there is this omnipresent narration by James Brolin that's doing this thing of calling attention to the story aspect. Sometimes stories don't start at the beginning, which is just underlining the fact this is a fable, this is a fairy tale. It's got a very Sam Elliott, you know, the dude abides kind of vibe.
No one knew which came first, the hybrids or the virus. But that question would become the biggest mystery of our lifetime.
I like the dialogue mostly, but occasionally you've got characters saying things like, men used to use this to kill each other. It was called war. And it's like, okay, a little of that goes a very long way. But it's been a punishing 15 months. So to have something I was fully expecting to be dour and doom and despair turn out to be something that kind of embraced the subtext of the book, which was hope and humanity, it kind of won me over.
Yes. They lean very hard into that. And, you know, I was reading, I wish I could remember where I read this. There was an interview with the showrunner, and he talked about the idea of Korean cinema, that he felt that tonally they make shifts that maybe American audiences don't always get to see in Hollywood, and how he was attempting to do some of that. I think we have seen some of that in other Netflix shows, even Umbrella Academy.
Sure.
You know, shows that really say, look, there's a lot to watch out there. Let's do something that's kind of weird. Because fundamentally, this story is super common in the movies and in books, right? It's like this little innocent child, usually a young boy. There's a gruff trench coat wearing type figure who helps protect him, whether that's The Road, whether that's, you know, the Wolverine movie, Logan. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like I could rattle off a list of these kinds of odysseys, essentially,
right,
where a child is orphaned in some way in a world that none of us can really understand. And, you know, I guess that doesn't get old. I don't know. Maybe sometimes it gets old, but theoretically, it's not getting old because they're still making these products. And this is probably a time to bring up some of the other stars in it. One is Nanzo Anozie, who mm-hmm. plays the gruff character I was talking about. This is a figure who we find out their backstory later on, but this is the person who kind of ushers this child back into the real world, so to speak, but is also the protector who has a dark past. And he mm-hmm. does delightful work.
How long are you going to follow me?
Till we get there, I guess.
Get where?
Colorado.
Oh, I forgot to tell you. Colorado blew up. Yeah, everything's gone. Lasers, I think, and all the people there gone too. So sad. Sorry you missed it. Oh well, have a great life.
That was a joke.
I mean, it's not overdone, the gruff thing. It feels very like, you know, proxy for the audience being like, yeah, kid, sometimes you're a little bit annoying. Like, I get it. Like, you're cute, but like, maybe mm-hmm. you're not so good at this survival thing.
Right.
And also Adil Akhtar, who plays a doctor who I assume in the book must have been an evil doctor, but in this scenario is given a backstory. Can you tell me like what's going on there? Because he's very sympathetic in this.
Well, again, in every choice the series makes, it is softening the edges of the book, and I'm all for that. Will Forte's character in the books is a religious fanatic. Adil Akhtar's Dr. Singh is evil, and he's given here, as you say, a humanizing backstory so that we explain his choices if we don't excuse them. But Neil Sandilands as General Abbott, who has this great look, he's kind of Edward Gorey on speed. I really like his look. He is not given that. Yet, there is so much that is being held back. So the lore of the book is not the same as the lore of the show. And whether that they've made a fundamental change from the jump or if they're holding back things for future seasons remains to be seen. I don't know the answer to that.
I mean, I wouldn't mind if they were just going in a different direction. I'm a person who considers myself a survivor of watching The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
And I feel like there are ways that they deviated from the books that were helpful, but lots of ways they just stuck with it that I was like, why? You know, like, yeah, you don't need to do this for television. A graphic novel, it's a different thing. It's a different medium. It's okay for it to change, right? Like,
yep,
you need many, 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 many more images to make a movie or a show than you do to make a book. So you've got to, you know, like, I don't know, take some steps in different directions.
Sure. Let me follow up with something there, because like, I'm coming to the show from the books. It's gentler than the books. I like that. You represent the folks who are coming to this fresh. And you mentioned a Care Bear element. So was this too cute for you in places? Was this too soft for you?
Coming to it cold, I feel like if I was going to sit down with my 10-year-old and watch this, it might be actually kind of scary. Because mm-hmm. it was scary for me in some parts. And it's really dark. I mean, it is really dark. And I can see how that darkness works in a graphic novel, especially one from the time period you're talking about. When I went online to sort of look at images, you know, the image of Sweet Tooth in the comic books is just like a little bit older, kind of haunted and mm-hmm. a little scary looking. Mm-hmm. When I started watching it, it felt weirdly like Bambi.
Yeah.
You know, if you really think about Bambi, you're like, yo, your mom got murdered. Like, this is this is a dark way to start this story. Mm-hmm. This has the same quality where there's unbelievable violence going on. Maybe, I guess you could interpret it as, like children, it's something that it's in their periphery when they don't fully understand what's going on in the world. It's right there, but not quite there. And when they think about who will sit down to watch it, do they consider it family entertainment? That's the mm-hmm. part I'm not sure about.
Mm-hmm. Last question. The series does not resolve. We should let people know that. There are 8 episodes, and there was to me a kind of satisfying coming together of various characters and plot threads at the end of the last episodes, but it is by no means an ending. How'd that land on you?
Great. It's a setup. It's obviously mm-hmm. going to be another series. One of the things I absolutely love about the streaming revolution is even though sometimes we're prone to bloated series, I do like that more time is taken to develop characters. And I felt like by the end of this series, I had a really good grasp about people and their motivations and what they were doing and how their stories were now knitted together. Mm-hmm. It didn't feel rushed. It didn't take 22 episodes, right, you know, which is what a network order would take. Mm-hmm. And I was fine. You know, I don't know if we'll have to wait a year or 2 years or like in this day and age, how long it takes to get to that next season. But I felt like it told its setup story really well.
I think 8 episodes is actually the ideal season for something like this, because there wasn't that one episode that felt like bloat, that felt like we're wasting time, we're spinning our wheels, we need to get this person to the next thing, and so we're going to, you know, waste time on backstory. When we get backstory, it does inform the character that we're watching. It doesn't feel extraneous to it. So yeah, I'll be there for the next season whenever it comes, if it gets one, which it likely will. We want to know what you think about Sweet Tooth. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. And that brings us to the end of our show. Thank you, Audie, for being here. It's always a pleasure.
Yes, thanks so much. I love talking with you.
And I you. And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. And if you've got a second and you're so inclined, please subscribe to our newsletter at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. And we will see you all tomorrow when we will be recommending some songs for your next road trip.